God's not dead, he's merely hiding. You can see him in the morning when the sun is rising. Greed's not good and God's not dead. Don't care what Nietzsche or Ayn Rand said. The blood of every man is red, and I'm not going to war. They justify all the things they do with convoluted.
It is time for a weekly visit from our favorite social, political, and metaphysical commentator, Les Visible. He writes several blogs right around the globe that expresses reality as it is seen from beyond that smoky mirror of spin and deception, with a style and candor that cuts deep, separating, as it were, the bone from the marrow. And here at Feet to Fire, we experience the audio edition with the powerful poetic delivery of his written message, with a style that you will love or hate, depending upon your desire to be alive and awakened to the light of truth, or remain asleep in the darkness of delusion. Let us take a trip across the pond to somewhere in Europe, and this week's comments from Les Visible.
Aroo! I keep on rocking in the free world, yeah. Welcome. Welcome to Dog Poetlandia. The dog poet is hovering the saucer pod above the embattled country of Iran, land of pistachios, and formerly the home of the Shah and Savak. Hopefully those who are out to get Iran will get theirs first, and I couldn't be more sincere. I'm waiting on Mr. Apocalypse to pick up his walking stick and whack a troll. I've had it with these merchants of war and death, and I believe the cosmos has had it too, but I don't want to spend your time here tonight talking about politics and madmen. I think you come here for the metaphysical side of the equation, and if you feel differently about it, you can email me and let me know. I want to talk tonight about something I've been trying to talk about in recent posts, and it has to do with why we're our own worst enemy, and it also has to do with dogs, and I think using dogs as an analogy might make transferring the concept a little easier. We all know what a dog is, but we don't all know who our worst enemy is. But if you said yourself, then you get to ride on the fast track to begin with. On 11-11, I was going to say 9-11 anyway, our oldest dog, Lily, passed from this vale of tears and went on to the Devic realm to see Lord Ganesh, who oversees that realm and is the overseer of animals. One of the critical things I try to pass on to people is the need to become unattached. For some, this leads to a calculated indifference, and for others, it leads to the inability to connect. All kinds of pathologies can emerge from the legitimate desire to cope with the endless sense of loss as everything and everyone familiar to us departs, and that includes ourselves as well. In order to achieve detachment and still be passionately engaged in life, one must keep in mind that you never lose anyone or anything, that your separation is temporary, instead of seeing every departure as something final. Learn to see all departures as temporary. We are all of us part of each other in any case, and our fond recall of one another is the magnetic connection that draws us together again, in another world, or perhaps again in this one. Dogs and all members of the animal kingdom are expressions of the subconscious. You can think of your subconscious as a child because it sees everything in pictures, and there are other parallels as well. Your instinctive life and so many features of your being come out of your subconscious. If your subconscious mind is at war with your conscious mind, as is the case with most people, then you have problems. A great deal of the magic in life comes out of a harmonious relationship between your conscious and subconscious mind. Stressful conditions transmitted from your conscious mind to your subconscious mind is the origin of disease in many cases, barring things like exposure to toxic environments and a few other exceptions. Your resistance to disease is seated in your subconscious. Whenever you think to yourself, oh, I wish I had that, I wish I could do that, or any of the other desires and dreams that you articulate in your conscious mind, they send a seed impression into your subconscious which acts on them. Whether this sprouts into something that flowers into your external world depends on the intensity of the thought and the atmosphere of belief that is sent along with the seed. Whether it materializes in anything that resembles what you thought you intended depends on how clearly you visualized it to begin with. At the blogs, I've mentioned that there are some ancient techniques that make it possible for you to communicate with your subconscious in pictorial form, which is the language that it understands. The tarot is one of those techniques. Rumor has it that some number of sages from various countries all gathered in Fez, Morocco in the 13th century to find a way to transmit the mysterious to the sincere seeker during the coming times of darkness. Legend has it that one of the sages took a stick and began to draw a picture in the sand, and the rest is history. The comprehensive reality of the tarot is far too complex to discuss in 15 minutes, so let's not even concern ourselves with the minor arcana at this time, and certainly let us not discuss fortune-telling at any point. Only the gifted can tell fortunes in the first place, and they're few and far between and leave a lot of things out, and you never know how critical some of those things might be. People who use the tarot to tell fortunes do not understand the incredible potential of the tarot, because you can change your fortune with it. Let's talk about the 22 major arcana, which correspond to the 22 letters of the so-called Hebrew alphabet. It's not really Hebrew. It was taken from the Chaldean flame alphabet. It's a magical language that, properly understood, can, as Eliphas Levi stated in a... He said, in a few years you can acquire a universal science and be able to speak on all subjects with unequal learning and inexhaustible eloquence. Imagine that. Let's mention the essential things about the tarot and about how it works. The 22 major arcana are archetypes. Your subconscious is like a stomach. When your conscious mind meditates on the images of the different cards, the image moves into the subconscious where it is digested and absorbed. What the subconscious then does is send its findings back to the conscious mind in forms of inspiration. It also expressed itself as suddenly discovered talents. It displays itself in different kinds of willingness to do things and carry on with an effortlessness previously unknown to you. It awakens the archetypes within you and makes them a part of you, and these archetypes are the qualities of the divine. Consider the implications of this. I'm not trying to sell you on the tarot. I've studied it for decades with the builders of the Adytum and on my own as well. It has a great deal to do with the person I've become. About 10 years ago, I stopped utilizing it because I made the connection I was seeking and I didn't need it anymore. I can't say if the tarot was responsible for that because I was looking for what I found before I ran into the tarot. All I know is that it helped me immensely. Simply by meditating on the cards and paying attention to the details in each picture, every form and component and every color relates to something that your subconscious already understands. Let me give you an example to show how it works and how truly incredible it may be. The death card is called Nun, which is fish. The star is called Zadi, which is a fish hook. The hanged man is Mim, or the sea. You drop the fish hook into the sea and pull out the fish of death. The quality associated with the star is meditation. Reflect on these things. These cards are a pictorial representation of the great work, the operation of the sun or the alchemical marriage, whatever you want to call it. Call it what you will. There are no limits to that which is possible. The only limit is the capacity of your imagination, which is represented by the Empress. If you were to want to utilize a tarot, you only need a deck of the cards, the Rider deck, and Paul Foster Case's book, The Tarot, and the rest will follow all by itself. We have to remember that we are being led. It is who is leading us that we should concern ourselves with. Are we being led into temptation or are we being led into liberation? There are other systems at work also, and teachers present physically and present invisibly for those who hearts cry out for them. I met more than one, so I guarantee their existence. Angels fly around the world on a regular basis, and they notice when the light of a particular soul is putting forth the right amount of luminescence. And word is passed to those who are waiting when the pupil is ready. We generally think the world is a place of unpredictable chaos, and that is because we only see at most half of what is going on at any one time, unless our supersensory apparatus are in operation, and the tarot can also ignite them, as can other modalities. You have to find the one that works for you, and then you're good to go. The world is not a place of unpredictable chaos. It is a harmonious environment where everything is under control if you are. When you walk in this world as if God were resident within you, then all fear, doubt, and uncertainty are dispelled. It's not hard to meet a supermarket manager. It's a little harder to meet a professional athlete and harder still to meet a famous musician. It's difficult to meet a senator and much harder to meet the president and the pope. God is a lot more exclusive than these creeps. So maybe you get some idea of the degree of difficulty and persistence involved. God isn't fond of dilettantes and poseurs. God isn't fond of inconsistent effort. God is not impressed by people who keep changing the channel. You say you want the divine will give you the opportunity to be as good as your word, because the divine is going to be as good as his or her word, because the divine is the word and the truth and the light. I don't much care what anyone has to say about the non-existence of God, since I have no questions in that regard, and no need to argue or debate the point, no desire to talk to people who do not believe. That is their affair. My desire is to talk to the people who do and hopefully provide some few items from my limited possession of useful things. As I've said a number of times, take what you find useful here and leave the rest. Not everything is for everyone. Some of us have assimilated certain things already, and some of us have not, and they are not the same in each person. Life's funny that way. We can't grow unless we let things go. We can't grow unless we let things go. That is one of the major tenets of growth to begin with. Growth is leaving things behind in order to grow into something else. Like snakes, we shed our skin as we incline toward what draws us into becoming. We become like what we emulate, and that can be very good and very bad, depending on who you emulate. We emulate people because we want to be like them or because we want to possess what they already have. We forget that we come into this world with nothing, and we leave with only what we have become, and none of the things that surrounded us or are owned by us in the process. For some reason, most people don't get this. You can tell them this in the clearest way, and they will agree with you 100%. For some reason, they will not hear you. It will remain an intellectual awareness without having become visceral. Suffering makes these things visceral for us. Loss makes these things visceral. Death and rebirth make these things understood at some point, and the difference between those who get it early on and those who get it much later is how much pain you're willing to endure to continue on in pointless exercises until you finally had it in your eyes open. I may have mentioned this before, but it's important enough to mention again. When I first came here to this small town, I used to interact with the locals at a particular watering hole. Invariably, they would tell me their problems, and I would consider what they told me. Then I would tell them what I thought about their problems and say, and it didn't matter what the problem was, short of some terminal disease. There was usually a simple solution, and I would tell them what it was. Generally, they would agree, and I would say, good, now you don't have a problem anymore. And we might laugh and move on to talk about something else. I would run into them later, sooner, and sometimes later, and in every case, they still had the problem. And I would inquire about whether they had applied what we had talked about, and they said no, and they didn't know why. And this puzzled me for quite some time. And when it occurred to me, I believe it happened, well, during one of my walks with Lily. A lot of realizations hit me when I was walking with her. Anyway, what I realized was they were the problem. They were the problem, and nothing was going to change until they did. It was as simple as that. People resist change, and they hang on to the things that make them what they are because of the curse of the familiar and the fear of the unknown, forgetting that all of what is presently familiar was at one time unknown. This is what a child possesses in great measure that adults have far less of than what they need. A child is not afraid of the unknown. Most everything is not only unknown to them, but a delight. This is part of the meaning of the quote from Jesus about how you must become as a little child to enter the kingdom of heaven, but only a portion of it. Part of it has to do with regaining our innocence. With our innocence corrupted and taken from us, we're imprisoned in the illusion of the physical world. A child is not. This is why they can have invisible friends and why angels and other beings can visit and communicate with them. What do you get if you do not attain to regenerated innocence? You get senility, which is also called a second childhood. Is that what you want? How often in a day do you talk to the divine? Never mind whether your excuse is that the divine doesn't answer you. How do you know that? The divine answers in all kinds of ways besides a still small voice within. The divine answers in our lives and in the voices of our friends and associates, in the opportunities that come to us which we don't even see because we're enthralled with the recurrent seductions of the world, this world of relentless disappointments. How often do you take your problems to the one and say, with confidence and faith, that you are placing it in his or her hands? God possesses either sex or none, as your preference demands. All you have to do is lay every problem in the hands of the divine, even as such simple things as, where is that bread knife? There is no question the divine does not know the answer to. There is no action the divine cannot perform. There is nothing the divine is not capable of. Nothing whatsoever, and you need to get that fact imprinted in your heart and mind without reserve or hesitation. You must pursue the possibility of becoming a friend of God. God will permit that for the special suitor who convinces God of the sincerity of their ardor. He will test and try them, but so long as they do not give up, they cannot fail. I consider myself the friend of the divine and have been told that I am. Whether that is true or not will be revealed in time, so all are free to question it, but would profit more by pursuing it themselves. Spending time judging and measuring yourself against others is time wasted to no positive effect. Better to put your mind in your own situation and seek with intensity the ear of the divine. Scream at God if you need to. Curse a blue streak at God. It's all good if it is God you are addressing. God understands perfectly and often has intentionally provoked you into it. Have perspective. Always remember that you are nothing in comparison with the divine. You're dust in search of a grave. Be as humble as the dirt that cries out for your presence and have faith, and God will fill the dust of you with light. You must be ignited with the flame of the enduring and profound love from and of and for the divine, and nothing will be denied to you. Right and wrong will no longer apply to you. The world will have no power against you, and all the armies of the world will not be able to stand against you. No prison will be able to hold you. No one will be allowed to touch you unless God allows it for the purpose of demonstration. Blessings will attend you that your present imagination cannot comprehend. The power of the love of God is beyond comprehension, and the depth of it has never been plumbed, and the parameters of it have never been measured, because they are measureless. Study the lives of those who have sought after God and marvel at the adversity through which they have passed to achieve it. Once you know that nothing can stop you and that you will never stop, you have the secret of enduring and certain success. You cannot fail if you do not give up. At some point, God will relent after having taken you through all the things necessary to build the qualities of God into you. One day you will stand in awestruck wonder at what you became without ever realizing exactly what was happening. Ah, what a glorious day that will be. And it is upon you what speed it occurs with. It is up to you. As the Bhagavad Gita said, success is speedy for the energetic. Well, my friends, we've come to the end of another broadcast, and I'll see you next week if there's one. In the meantime, ponder what you've heard and take what you find reasonable and important and apply it. Apply it. What is the point otherwise? We sit in endless speculation of things, debating the reality of them, and yet we fail to apply them. This is another mystery. So may your hearts awaken to the greatest task of them all, and the one with the fullest support of your Creator. May the divine inspire and fill you with the necessary industry and focus to push aside the trivial and enter into the deeps of the beauty and wonder of God. That said, Hare Krishna, Aloha, and Haru!
God's not dead, he's merely hiding. You can see him in the morning when the sun is rising. God's not dead, merely hiding. You can see him in the morning when the sun is rising.
Feet to Fire is a production of IPS Media Works on the OnSIC Radio Network of Stations.